if you get a chance to sit in a train, try to just sleep. If you get a chance to stand in a train, just try to grab a place to sit. So make the most advantage of the situation. And I just go there, don't feel shy, I just go there and sit there, and people just look at me, I don't care. So I am only concerned about the recovery, what is happening. It's a serious training, what's happening. And it's like no nonsense, absolutely focused on training, recovery, nutrition, go back to sleep, do some work, and then the day starts again.
It's a hard knocks life, Pasha.
Yeah.
Welcome to another episode of the Indian Cycling Podcast, brought to you by The Bike Affair. I'm your host, Harsha.
Hi, this is your co-host, Gokul. Today, we'll talk about track cycling, and we have a special guest with us, a person who has come on the show before as well, K.R. Pasha. Hi, Pasha. Welcome.
Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Doing good, Pasha.
I'm very excited to be on this podcast again.
Good. So, I know we have already introduced Pasha in the previous episode where he spoke. Today, I would like to introduce him in a probably a slightly different way and talk about the very first introductions that I had with him. So, as some of you may know, Pasha and I are colleagues at the Bike Affair. And I met Pasha about 1.5 years ago when he approached me for coaching in cycling. He was actually focusing on triathlons at that point in time, and he wanted to improve his cycling leg and focus on that, and he approached me. And while we were discussing about it, somehow the point came as to his childhood and where he had spent his childhood, and he had mentioned about Andaman and Nicobar Islands, and just like that I asked whether he was there in the place during tsunami, and he told me a very gripping story and something that left a lasting impression on me. So the day of the tsunami, Pasha and his family were there in Andamans, and that morning after the first tremor, everybody came out, and Pasha and his friend or rather friends ran towards the water, and within no time the tsunami hit the shore, and before they could realize, they were floating on water which was you know, taller than the water was deeper than the trees. And Pasha and his friend somehow grabbed a tree and held on to that, and they were on the tree top for 3 days, and just when help arrived, Pasha, after 3 days, Pasha fainted, and he regained his consciousness after 10 days, and I think his friend did not make it, and Pasha endured that 3 days on a top of a tree, and they did not have obviously any idea what had happened. They probably thought it was the end of the world. So he described how he hung on to dear life on the top of the trees without any hope, and how he motivated his friend to stick around, and that story of survival was something which was unbelievable, and that really inspired me, and I realized that somebody with this level of maturity when he was just 15 years old is what it takes to be a champion, and we started training together. So that is Pasha, the tsunami survivor. Oh. Out here, who is creating a tsunami on the tracks.
Wow, that's a great intro. Thank you, Gokul.
So, Pasha, can you tell us how you started how you took up track cycling, because it is not something which is very common.
Right, yeah. So, when I approached you for a training program for cycling, and then you started coaching me, and we became really very serious about cycling, and we started having specific goals, and that was a moment where I was really not able to spend much time training for the triathlons, and I decided to pick one sport and continue with that. Cycling was the one which really attracted me, and of course there were multiple reasons. The community was there, and we had a couple of races happening, so that kind of gave me a rush and wanted to do well, and I was looking my improvements in one particular sport because I was training for that. There was a good recovery happening. So, and then I decided to take a call that let's go with the cycling, and we decided to have a specific goals for the year, and that's when the nationals happened, and we all did really well at the nationals. And right after the nationals,
this was the road nationals.
This was the road nationals, yeah, in 2018. And right after that, the track national coaching camp was setting up in Hyderabad Velodrome, and I got the information from one of the coaches there. And before that, when we were training for the road nationals, we used to visit velodromes and do some training under Maxwell Trevor, sir. So that's where I really liked the concept of this velodrome racing, and the way it is built, and that's how I actually found myself that yes, this is somewhere I should be looking at. And another interesting part was the workout analysis and the training analysis what you were doing, Gokul. And you came up to me one day saying that I have a very good sprint profile, and we looked into the metrics, and that's where the actual seed was, you know, kind of sown. And I till that time I wasn't sure about my sprinting ability. But when the power numbers came up, and then I realized that yes, I can work on the sprinting, and that's where you started scheduling sprint workouts for me. And then I realized I can start, why don't I give a shot at the velodrome and try the sprint training there. And that's how it started, and I joined the velodrome training program under Maxwell Traverser after the road nationals, and after that there was no looking back.
Good, yeah. I think yeah, the your natural style of cycling is very very adapted to, or very much in line with what is expected of the track. So I think it is it's the perfect match for you.
Yeah, thank you, Gokul. Thanks for identifying the sprinter inside me.
My pleasure.
So the events in any track cycling are so varied and complex. You have a sprint, which is effectively a one-on-one race. And then you have Keirin, which is a more traditional race with multiple riders on the track.
Yes.
So can you take us through how these events actually pan out?
Okay. So the track cycling is broadly categorized in two categories. In fact, the races are also categorized in two categories. So one is the sprint and the endurance. So the riders are also categorized in the same way. There are sprint riders who only do the sprint events, and there are the endurance riders who do the pursuit events. And so there are a couple of multiple events in the sprint category. Let's say the individual sprint, which you just mentioned, it's a pair sprint, and it's a one-on-one sprint where you start neutrally with 3 laps to go. It's overall a 1 kilometer sprint, but you start neutral For the first 1-2 laps are just like the warm-ups, and you play tactics on one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And the final 200 meters of the 1 kilometer is actually timed.
Mm-hmm.
So whoever crosses the line first, finish line first, actually wins the sprint event. So it's also a speed-based, explosive one, but also a tactical one,
mm-hmm.
more of a tactical. So there were times when people have clocked very bad timings but cross finish line. So even though he's a winner.
So it's kind of like a cat and mouse game.
Yes,
you can restrict your opponent,
yes,
and still win.
Correct. And the other event is a team sprint where you have 3 riders who take a start, who take a standing start all together.
Mm-hmm.
And each rider takes 1 lap.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets off to the banking side. So the last rider, whoever finishes, is the time clocked. So whoever gets the least time are the winners for the team sprint. And then you have a kilometer time trial.
So going back to the team sprint, so is it the time of the entire team from the starting to the end?
Correct.
And only the one team is riding at any time.
Yeah, there are events where at the finals, two teams start opposite sides.
Oh, just
yes.
like a person.
Yeah.
Just like a person.
I saw
Correct.
The final between Netherlands and Russia.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised the Netherlands guys were actually bigger than the Russians. Like physically bigger. Yeah.
In Netherlands, they have the highest average height of men in the world.
Yeah, but Russians are known to be like big and thick, you
mm-hmm.
know, like, and they actually start one, the Netherlands team started at one end of the this thing, and at a diametrically opposite position the Russian team started.
Yeah.
And whoever crossed their respective lines, and the camera work was also very good in the sense that they had one camera so that they could capture the line on both sides.
Mm.
So while they were, the ending points were different, it was very nice in the sense that you
yes.
could see who was going to win.
Correct. It happens very rarely that the other side has actually caught the another team. That means you have almost covered half lap.
Yeah.
And
half lap.
That is a clear win in the whole game.
Mm.
But generally they win most of these world level championships.
Mm.
They win by fraction margin
yeah.
seconds.
Mm.
And we have a Kerin event originated from Japan,
mm.
and very interesting race format. In fact, I must say it has 6 to 8 riders in one heat. It's a heat based, and then you have qualifiers, semi-finals, and then finals. So it's a motor paced race format where you have a dirny vehicle. It gives you close to around 3 to 4 laps of dirny pacing. Starts from 25 km per hour to up to 45 to 50 km per hour, and it kind of gives you a lead out.
Mm-hmm.
And the strategy is pacing behind the lead out, and once the dirny vehicle moves off and the sprint starts, it's for almost 2-2.5 laps. And it's like a pure raw sprint race format. And interestingly, in Japan, people bet on these riders,
mm-hmm.
and there are people, riders who are part-time and full-time salaried just for this
mm-hmm.
This kind of format of races. And the last in the sprint category is the 1 kilometer time trial, the most painful event for sprinters, I must say. That's one of the painful event. In fact, I am one of the kilo riders. I do kilometer time trial and sprint. So the first 1-2 laps are magical. I mean, you just explode, and the second lap is almost like a rolling you get. And the third lap is next to death. That's what I compare it to. And you just hang on to your life just to cross the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
So the person who has the highest, most high number of pain tolerance or lactic threshold holding capacity will actually go to next level in that kind of race format. But any kilo rider, if you ask, they hate it, but that's one of the best events in sprint category.
There is a difference between the sprint and the kilometer time trial, like he's saying, because the kilometer time trial is almost on the border of sprint and endurance. So and it is very similar to the 400 meters run. Michael Johnson and all, you will he talks about how it is about not slowing down in the last 100 meters. So to an extent it is very similar, and the 100 meter dash is obviously closer to the sprint.
Correct.
And in fact Kiran is a very interesting race, and it is in Japan it is almost like religion, and you know they do a lot of things to keep it pure betting without any external influence. In fact Pasha's role model, he is a French rider who has been in the whose career transformed after a couple of years training in Japan for Kiran. So and the in the Japan where the Kiran races happen, they try to keep it as level playing as possible. Everybody is supposed to use steel bikes. They are all of very similar weight and quality, so that they don't get an advantage. People are all dressed almost similar, and they are like race horses with just different colored helmets and numbers. So they are not even allowed to raise their hands after victory, because the officials do not want in any way the identity of a rider to be revealed, because they want it to be as pure gambling as possible without any external influence or any sort of prior knowledge coming into. So it's a very, very interesting format actually.
So Kiran is also popular for another reason, because of the Indian cycling sensation S.O. Albane. I watched S.O.'s race on YouTube, and it was thrilling to say the least. He came second by a margin of 0.17 seconds. That is the kind of difference you find in a 100 meter running race.
Correct. And we all are really proud of the achievement. After a long time, India has achieved a silver medal at a world ranking event in cycling, especially for track cycling. ISO is one of the promising athletes from the Kelo India camp, and he was identified and trained for the coming Olympics, and he has shown the results very quickly, and now he is at the world number one ranking, in fact. And interestingly, the Kiran event, he was almost hitting the gold, but just, you know, within the fractions, he just came with the silver, and he was extremely happy about the achievement what he has got. And if you listen to a couple of his earlier interviews on TV, he said that he had the potential to get that gold. In fact, he was much stronger than the guy who took the gold. But track event is, that's what I was trying to tell you, it's more tactical, and things happen just in fraction of seconds, and you might be the last rider or the first rider sometimes. And ISO has really made us proud by getting that silver medal at the world ranking.
Also, I just want to say one thing about all the people who interviewed him. None of them did a good job. Because those interviews were all by people who never ride by themselves.
Yeah.
So they were like getting very basic things wrong about him. And I watched that, and it was really cringeworthy.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yes.
So, again, going back to Pasha is telling about tactics and in racing. However, no talk about track event will be complete without talking about Sir Chris Hoy. So he was a significant departure when it came to his strategy or tactics. So just to give you, go back to the sprint thing that sprint race that Pasha was explaining about. So the reason the first two laps are almost tactics or cat and mouse play is because the person who is starting behind is actually at an advantage because he could slingshot his way from the draft of the leading rider. So there is an advantage in being at the rear.
Yes.
And in fact, this is the reason why the concept and the technique of track stand came into picture. Mm-hmm. That is, you are allowed to, one of the basic rules is that you can stand on the track, because especially because it is a fixie, without keeping your leg down, and people try the tactic to allow the person behind to go over. So usually the way this the sprint races are done is it's a best of three usually, and based on a coin toss, it is decided who is going to start for start ahead and who is going to start behind, and they alternate. So in a best of three, at least once you will get to start behind, which is considered advantageous. But Chris Hoy, Sir Chris Hoy, did not give a damn for all these things. He would just blast his way up front and nobody could catch him. So, and his strategy was get ahead when as soon as possible. Yeah, and yeah. You know, he just powered through. So each to his own. To an extent, it is also because of his strengths were more in that like the Michael Johnsons of the world, in the sense that he was better off at that kicking a little late and lasting longer. He had the confidence of being able to do a longer sprint. In fact, that is one of the key strategies that that is supposed to be done. Like, you know, I remember when I was reading for my certification, and one of the things that we discuss is simple things as being able to launch an attack from either leg.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by this is, say you are on the track, you are riding very slowly. You don't know when the other person is going to attack. Sometimes your left leg is in the front, sometimes your right leg is in the front. And we are all going to have preference of one leg over the other. And if the attack is launched when our strong leg is behind, we have already lost that half a turn of the pedal cycle.
Mm.
So a sprinter has to practice being able to launch an attack on either leg.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he should also know what is the strong leg of the other person, and if possible, try to use that half a pedal stroke advantage whenever he can. So it is very involved and very beautiful sport actually. But
correct.
Again, there is no cookie cutter solution. You have to play to your strengths.
So just to add some more spice to the thing. So that is one of the primary fundamental techniques what riders look into. That's like you always have a focus and watch the pedal position. There are also like pedal positions from where the sprinter can launch, the angle where the legs are, and also sometimes you also need to understand if he's a long sprinter or a short sprinter and choose the right gear ratio accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
And because the event is timed for the last 200 meters, it is very difficult if you lose just one pedal.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot catch him. Like, it's really difficult until unless you are like super solid strong like Sir Chris Hoy, who can like has the raw power to get through. Otherwise, you always need to plan the race, and even in the best of three, you might have to change your techniques for every match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just to give the rider shock.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also the speed plus tactic.
Sometimes I feel like I don't really understand why track cycling isn't more popular. Because it's fast, it's effectively an indoor sport, which audiences can actually watch live, and they can actually sit between races. Compare that to road racing, and it's almost like watching test match cricket with a lot of cat and mouse games. And the audience can't watch the full race, and you know, you're literally standing on the roadside hoping to catch a glance of your hero.
Right. So I can answer this in two parts, actually. Mm-hmm. So one thing is why it is not popular. Road cycling is easy to get started with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can take a basic road bike and get started, start riding.
Mm.
So track cycling, so as soon as you think it is a fixed gear, no brakes, you know, and it...
see this huge banking.
Huge banking. And then you're like, oh, maybe I should start road cycling first and then I'll get back to it. So by the time you actually get into track, you everybody loves road cycling.
Yeah.
So it takes time to understand what are the, you know, positives in you, whether you should go for track cycling. So track cycling is more of a serious riding.
Mm.
Rather than, yes, of course, there's fun in the speeds, but you cannot joke there. I mean,
yeah.
there's no joke happening there. You get onto track, you do your training. It's always a serious training happening, because one big mistake, or maybe one small mistake, you're right on the concrete. So probably getting stitches or replacing your tooth set or something. So that is one reason why it isn't popular. Let's talk about India. So there's still people, you know, coming and understanding about track cycling because of people like ISO once they are in limelight.
Yeah.
And there are times where people don't even know where is velodrome. I mean,
yeah.
Even in Hyderabad, a lot of people ask me, oh, is there a velodrome in Hyderabad?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the scenario. But compared to the road cycling, it's, as I said, it's easier to get started with. And you just take a road bike and you see somewhere some guy is riding. And the community is, on a scale, it is larger. And to answer the second question, yeah, in terms of the spectatorship, what you ask? Is that what you asked?
Yeah, the spectator, it's more fun to watch.
Yeah, because it's a closed circuit, right?
Close circuit,
so
yeah.
330 meters or max 450 meters. You always are looking at your favorite rider. What is he doing? What are the events happening? And you can always cheer up, clap. Have fun, have tea, and finish the race by end of the day and leave. So,
yeah,
whereas
yeah.
in a road race, it's the
on
distance is huge.
Yeah.
So, maybe you can just cheer up your rider just for 1 minute and then he leaves off. So,
yeah.
I hope I answered.
Yeah, yeah.
What you asked me.
I think at this point we should also talk a little bit about the track itself. There are indoor tracks and outdoor tracks also, the velodromes. Usually the outdoor velodromes are concrete and they are 333 meters. That is three laps would make a kilometer.
Mm.
Usually the indoor velodromes are usually having wooden tracks and they are slightly smaller. They are about 250 meters.
Yes.
So four laps would make a kilometer. Even the tires are different between the velodrome, the concrete velodromes and the wooden velodromes. I'm told it is much, much more difficult to find the lines in a indoor wooden velodrome because it is much more slippery.
Mm-hmm.
And the composition of the tires which are used on the wooden tracks are slightly different. They are almost more of silk rather than cotton.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the tires are made up of a mixture of cotton and rubber. I believe the indoor velodrome tracks use the silk content in the tires are more. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
So there's also the endurance events like points race and individual and team pursuits. Can you describe what these events are?
Right. So in talking about endurance events in track cycling, very interesting ones. You have individual pursuit, which is a 4 kilometer time trial technically. And yes, of course, they are also riding it super fast. But the difference is the start is not that explosive, mm-hmm. because you need to sustain for the next 3 kilometers. So you start slightly less explosive way and try to maintain the speed is what the pursuit is about.
Mm-hmm.
So you maintain the same speed till the end. And then you have team pursuit where the four riders start together and three to finish. And you have scratch race, more or less like a mass start,
mm-hmm.
Which is around 15 kilometers, which makes up like 100 to 120 laps.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a mass start finish, whoever finishes in the end, the first top three are declared the winners of the race. And then you have, interestingly, the points race. Points race is more or less about, you know, 70 to 80 laps race. And for every fifth or a tenth lap is a sprint lap.
Mm.
So you get points according to the sprint laps.
Right.
Mm. It is essentially a criterium held on a track.
Yeah.
Mm.
Correct.
Yeah. So Pasha, can you tell us some of the big names in track cycling? We already spoke about Sir Chris Hoy. Tell us some of the names who inspire you from the both the national and the international levels.
Yeah, let's start with the fanboy kind of thing. I'll start with Francois Pervez. The video which I showed about him is, and he also holds the world record for 1 kilometer. He has clocked 56 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
56 seconds. He was the first to clock sub 1 minute, and he literally clocked 56 seconds at first time.
And what is important is the 1 kilometer time trial is they have a standing start.
Correct.
So he has a standing start and he has finished 1 kilometer in less than 56
seconds. And you actually explode and start at a speed of 60 kilometers per hour. That's mm-hmm. the minimum. And in fact, when we say 56 seconds, he should have definitely ridden 62 kilometers to 63 kilometers per hour
mm-hmm.
speed for next.
Because the first 10 seconds it takes to build up that speed.
Yeah. And we have Robert Forsman from Germany. Very interesting rider and most popular, like how we have Peter Sagan.
Mm-hmm.
Because of his quads, the extremely big quads, and the video which is popular in YouTube about
the toaster
video.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He powered a toaster with his
legs.
Yes. Yeah.
And very interesting. We have let's talk about in India. I look forward. In terms of sprint, I look forward, we have Aman, who is Amarjeet Singh from the railways. And we have Sanu Raj, who has actually clocked 10.3 for a 200 meter time trial qualifying for the sprint, which was somewhere in Melbourne. He has given that. And the record still stands
Indian on his name,
eh? Indian, yeah. And Iso Elvan is looks very promising, and I also look forward to him, the techniques. I have seen him during the Jaipur Track Nationals 2018. So, and we also have Ronaldo Singh for the 1 kilometer time trial.
Excellent name, by the way.
Yes. yeah. And he is also looks very promising and looks strong for the kilometer time trial. And in the pursuit event, I have Venkappa, Bilal from Jammu Kashmir, and Manjeet Singh, who still holds the national record for the individual pursuit. These are the big names we are looking forward from India.
So Manjeet Singh is an interesting case. He also went to the Asian Road Championships.
Yes, yes.
So now he's going to target the Asian track.
There. Correct, correct. So very interesting thing. The pursuit riders in track also become very good road riders. The best examples we have Bradley Wiggins. We have Mark Cavendish.
Mark Cavendish was a sprinter.
He was more into a points race and a kind of a scratch race kind
and
of
Madison thing. And all.
Madison and all. But all these endurance event riders from track become very good at road and vice versa sometimes.
Geraint Thomas.
Yeah, Geraint Thomas.
Mm-hmm. So in fact, Gaviria is doing very well. He has a track background.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
So, Pasha, what is the big upcoming event in track cycling?
I am right now lining up for the Asia Cup, Track Asia Cup 2019. I have my open trials coming up in the last week of August. And the Asia Track Cup is going to happen from September 9th to 12th.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm lining up right now for.
Okay. The cycles for track events are pretty unique. They have no brakes, like you said. They are fixed gear. And they just look different compared to a road bike. So can you explain why this is?
So track bike is typically, let's say, a zero-nonsense bicycle. The reason is they wanted to make it more aerodynamic. So you just have a fixed gear, you have one single gear and it is fixed to the wheel and no brakes. So making it light as much as possible, making it the most aerodynamic bicycle as much as possible. And in terms of the look of the bike, the frame geometry is designed in such a way. For a sprinter frame, it is designed more aggressive. The handlebar is more deeper. And the saddle height is slightly higher, and you take the most advantage of the aerodynamics as much as possible. Mm-hmm. The position of aggressiveness, since it's a very short event, you compromise on the position slightly and take the most advantage out of it. Whereas the endurance bike is more like a time trial bike, but still not having any gears or brakes. The bicycles are UCI approved. They have a weight limit. They can still make the lightest track bicycles, but UCI still has a limit. So you cannot get lower than 6.5 kilos for a track frame, including the wheels and the whole setup.
Mm-hmm. And you look like a character out of the Tron movies in full gear. Oh. With a very interesting looking helmet. Obviously, sir, all riders wear tight gear, but even for a cyclist, the gear for track cycling looks a little odd.
Yes, because track cyclists are built very well. You should also appreciate my physique. They're built very well, spend a lot of time in gym, get a good physique, they're muscular. And when you wear a speed suit or a skin suit, the cuts just come out, you know. You look like a Superman.
Yeah.
And whenever I post a photo on Facebook, a lot of people call me Superman. Yeah. And the helmets are designed aerodynamic. They look very fancy. They look very fancy, and that's what, you know, track cycling is interesting about. And
one more very interesting thing about the crank arm, that is the arm which is attached to the pedal, that is slightly shorter.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously to prevent it from hitting the ground when you're taking the steep bankings.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there are a lot of small things which make it slightly different from a traditional bike. How much of the track cycling is sheer power, because road cycling still has a lot of endurance built into it. Depends on the course, of course, but still, but generally, you know, you have 150 kilometers and so on. So is it just raw power? How would you describe a track?
Of course, the sprint events, especially the kilometer time trial and the individual sprint, let's say all the sprint categorized races are like purely raw power. And any track cyclist would be hitting more than 1500 watts there are up to 2400 watts. That's like super high power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely based on the raw power first. That is the primary building block, let's say, and then the tactics of the game applies. Sometimes you are really not putting 1600 1700 watts, but you still win the game. That's where the tactics come up. But if you actually ask any track cyclist to go for a sprint or do a 200 meter flying time trial, they would be hitting somewhere around more than 1600 watts to up to 2300 watts.
There is also another aspect, right? It is not only there is higher power, but it is the explosiveness.
Yes.
You want to launch that power at at a much faster pace, the
right.
creatine-based power
right. Right.
delivery systems.
So the sprinters, that is what differentiates between the endurance and a sprint rider. So, in fact, the sprint riders are also selected the way they have that anaerobic explosive thing inside. One of the selection criteria is to jump, have a standing jump, and as long as you can, you know. So
yes. So just jump as far as you can?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
We are not talking about the long jump where you just have a...
So there's no run. This is a standing jump.
There's no run. This is a standing jump. And just to check, you know, how much can you actually explode and generate that explosive power and cross the line or whatever mark they have.
Mm-hmm.
That is one thing before selecting or actually looking if he is a really a good sprinter.
Yeah, especially at the
grassroots
level
levels.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That I'm sure that is how ESO got selected.
Yeah. Just to add up, the Kelo India selection also has this thing as mandatory selection.
I think to a large extent this is not only for track cycling, even for road cycling probably, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the standing long jump and standing high jump are a measure of your explosiveness or the muscle tone.
Correct.
So, usually they are used for multiple sports, you know,
mm-hmm.
to understand your explosiveness.
And that's how the anaerobic capacity for a track sprinter is much higher. And sometimes it is also genetic, but you also build it up to extreme high levels by training and structured training and the food you are eating and the fitness levels and everything comes into picture.
Even I'll get a little bit slightly more technical here. Even in anaerobic, when we say anaerobic, it is referring to how our body is producing energy. So when our body is producing the energy in the presence of oxygen, it is aerobic, and in the absence of oxygen, it is anaerobic. And even in anaerobic, usually because anaerobic without oxygen, you cannot produce for long, it is shorter periods. But even in that, there is one system which is called the creatine phosphate, which is what is the explosiveness, what enables a weightlifter to be able to produce the raw power to clean and jerk and stuff like that. So that lasts for less than 10 seconds.
Correct.
So in fact, that is one of the reasons that when you do weight training, it helps in track cycling as well, because you are also working on that creatine phosphate energy system. So that's that explosiveness is very important for track.
So we have a velodrome in Hyderabad, and you're training with the biggest name in Indian track cycling, Maxwell Trevor, who was on the show a couple of episodes ago.
Yes, and I feel, not myself, but this generation is really fortunate to have him and train under him. The reason why I am specially fortunate, because the events I chose and the events I'm training, he is the master there. He has the record of continuously 10 years in the sprint events. And he is the national champion for 10 years during his time. And he was the only one who was actually officially selected for the Olympics in track cycling. And the way, the experience, what he brings in, the tactics, and a lot of learnings from him, not only from the physical training part, but as the mental training part as well. But track cyclists really need the mental strength. They really need to have a strong mental strength, even though you have the power. Just before your match, if you decide you can win, you can just go for the win. If it's all the mental game happening there. And he, the way the training happens with him is all a mixture of everything. And the experience and the tactics what he brings in, I feel really fortunate to train under him. And in fact, the generation, this generation is really lucky to have him.
So Pasha, what does a typical training day look like for you?
Ah, okay. So the most toughest question I am facing today. Let's say I'll just make it very simple. My day starts at around 4:30 a.m. Maybe a little early. And so I have to catch a train to go all the way to Velodrome. It's around 25 kilometers from here. So I catch the first train, which is at around 4:50. And the train reaches there around 5:55 to 6-ish. And then we go for a warm-up there. I do a good 35 to 45 minutes warm-up, ensuring that I really, you know, warm up the engine before I ride those heavy gears and do my main workout set. And around 7:30 we start our main workouts after the stretches and all. And we finish up by around 11:30, sometimes 11:45, because we really need at least 15 to 20 minutes rest between each set to recover, get the heart rate into the rest zone and get ready and perform better for the next set. And from there I catch, do a close to around 20 to 25 minute cool down spin, and then followed by some stretches, and try to grab some food there, which is almost like a breakfast and in between breakfast and lunch. So I try to grab some dosa or idli like a breakfast there, and then I catch a train around 12. I have a train sharp at 12:10 or something, and reach here by 1:15, sometimes 1:30, and get fresh, have some lunch, and get back to work at the bike affair. And I just come back around 8 o'clock, 8:30, pack my bag for the next day so that I get that extra sleep in the morning, so I'm not really running around to searching for things. So I pack my bag, get some good dinner, and then go to sleep. Yes, of course, I'm compensating a little sleep because of the travel, but ensuring that I get that extra 15 to 20 minutes sleep in the night, and also try to grab some sleep in the morning in the train as well. That is one thing I do. And in the return as well, sometimes there have been days when I'm really tired, I just sit on the train floor, stretch my legs, get that extra recovery, whatever I can get. Initially I was little shy and reluctant to do that, sit on the train floor. But later on I realized that yes, I can, if I have an advantage there, let's do it and get that extra recovery, whatever I can get. That thing popped up after Maxwell said something very interesting to me, because I was, initial days I was telling him that I think the recovery is slow, something is going wrong. And then he said something interesting to me, that if you get a chance to sit in a train, try to just sleep. If you get a chance to stand in a train, just try to grab a place to sit. So make the most advantage of the situation. And I just go there, don't feel shy, I just go there and sit there, and people just look at me, I don't care. So I am only concerned about the recovery, what is happening. The legs are really rested for the next 45 to 1 hour, and it does wonders. So the whole day is like this. It's a serious training, what's happening, and it's like no nonsense. Absolutely focused on training, recovery, nutrition, go back to sleep, do some work, and then the day starts again. That's what I have been doing since probably more than 6 months now.
It's a hard knocks life, Pasha.
Yeah.
I just know that there is light at the end of this tunnel.
Do you see a seat there? Yeah, I think that will be more useful. He doesn't need lights. That's only for road bikers.
So for those who don't know about Indian local trains and Hyderabad MMTS, if you can sit while others are standing, you're a brave person. And goes to show that for you, that target is more important than, say, the discomfort or sort of snide glance that someone throws at you.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it happens with everybody, I think. Whoever is really focused and has a goal and target, your focus is right on it. I mean, you really don't care what's happening besides you, and you really don't bother about the small things. And when you have a focus, a goal, a target set, things will start falling into place. You just need to be little more disciplined and give 100% to it. That's what I believe in, and hard work, of course. Things will fall in place, and someday you'll just hit the jackpot.
But you're not hitting the jackpot, Pasha. You are working towards it.
Yeah. Yes.
The jackpot,
yes,
is for people who don't work for it. So you used to have a relatively secure job at a law firm.
Right.
And you gave up that to pursue a career in cycling.
Right.
How are you managing the change in lifestyle?
Okay, so right now my parents don't know about it. So, Dad, are you listening? I'm a practicing lawyer, and I have a valid license, and I was working with a law firm. All these things came up, decision to get into cycling, not able to get proper recovery after training because of the court works, it's more about standing, shouting my lord, and walking here and there, floors here and there, carrying a lot of files and all. A lot of strength training was going on. In fact, Gokul remembers during those cycling training, I was working in the law firm. So I used to tell him that, I used to text him, like, today I did strength training. I was carrying 3-4 kilos files. You also carry the acts, books and all. Mm-hmm. You assist your senior. And the lunch, the food timings, irregular food timings. All these things came into my mind. And I said, I'm not giving 100% to what I want to do. Maybe I should be practicing law. Or if I'm really liking the cycling sport, I should give 100% to this. And the moment came, That decision I wanted to make when I actually started doing track cycling, and I decided, and we also discussed once, Gokul and me went for a ride, and we were having breakfast at Sangareddy.
Mm-hmm.
And Gokul and myself were discussing that, I mean, it's not worth it just giving by 50-60% investing money on equipment and training for 50-60%, and you know, the recovery is not happening. It's not worth it. I think we should give all out for this year and the next year. That thing actually kind of hit me. I said, yeah, I mean, if we are doing it, let's do 100% and commit ourselves to it. And that's where I took the call, and Bike Affair opened the doors, and I working at a bike shop makes me to understand this industry, because I love cycling, I love bikes, and it becomes much easier for me to understand everything. And then I'm just, right now I'm just giving 100% to cycling and and job at Bike Affair. This is what I'm doing right now.
I remember Naveen John mentioning in one of his talks about how everything has to line up. It is not enough if you have a good day. It is also important that a few other competitors should have a not so great day.
Yeah.
For things to click sometimes, at least the first few wins. Similarly, there is a, you know, there is a lot that goes into building an ecosystem for an athlete, especially in a country like India, where it is so difficult for people to understand. So we talked about equipment. We actually did not talk about equipment. We talked about his training. We talked about his recovery. We did not talk about nutrition that much. Nutrition requirements can be very expensive. Like, I mean, if you have to take a protein shake, or if you have to take some form of vitamins or some electrolytes during riding, all these things are not cheap. They are very, very expensive, you know. So so actually the nutritional aspects is very demanding and very expensive. Similarly, the equipment, and the two track equipment is very difficult to find in India. Even as a bike shop, we struggle to get the equipment required because it is so much of a niche. There is very little availability. So just training and nutrition is not enough. Now, training, nutrition, recovery, equipment, the right support, and now there are a lot of finances involved, in the sense that you need a team to support you, you need to have the right equipment, you need to be able to travel. Like NJ was talking to Pasha the other day about some of the things that he has to be taken care of. He was talking about how important it is to travel in a travel to the race in a comfortable way, because finally you have worked hard for 6 months and you go in a train for 2 days.
Yeah.
Leading up to an event, it absolutely, you know, messes up your chances of succeeding. So, and if that means that it's a remote place, you have to go in a flight and take a cab to the final destination, because the way things are in India, usually they try to put a national event in some remote place just to, you know, get in that particular state's thing involved. So there are hundreds of things that are required, and you know, the tough part is that when he is actually giving up a job and his expenses significantly increase, even from the cycling part of it. So it is, and it can be very stressful because you cannot go and discuss it with your family as well.
Yeah. What Gokul has said is absolutely 100% correct. And this thing, was actually like a second tsunami for me. So not making fun of it, but the reality actually hit me at that moment. I mean, I had a fixed pay job. I left that. I had few files of my individual practice for which I had already took the advance payments, and you know, I had some little savings which I used to buy the best track splitter's frame, and we kind of built the frame starting from the scratch just to ensure that we are not really wasting the money elsewhere and using it very wisely. I am still building the bike, in fact. I am still, I have to get a couple of extra equipment. And in terms of equipment, this is what the story is about. And then the nutrition, since I am into a track sprint event, I need to work on my calorie intake. I have to build my muscle mass, gym memberships, you know, the calorie intake, the nutrition, the supplements, protein supplements, vitamins, electrolytes, what Gokul has already mentioned. Speaking about it, I am like, what kind of expenses are this? I was happy eating rumali roti, butter paneer masala, and just thinking, wow, I got some casein tonight. But I actually now really need to work on getting some casein scoop in the night. Casein is very expensive. Just to ensure that my body is not going in catabolic stage in the night. And a couple of other elements need to be focused. So I am spending like a rich guy, but I don't know the expenses. And then the travel, what Gokul mentioned, now things are coming up. I have to Gokul also earlier cautioned me this time that plan your travel wisely this time for the Delhi tracks trials. And the recovery part, I go do cupping sessions twice in a month, twice and thrice sometimes, because the muscles get so tired. I develop these knots and triggers. I need to get them released, and I need expert. I don't want any roadside massage wala coming and hitting with hammers. And if you look and start doing it 100% perfectly, you are actually doing like a pro athlete. And
which you are.
Yeah, I mean, if you check my Instagram, people think I'm a some pro guy getting cupping every once in 15 days, eating all that broccoli salads, the equipment. But I feel, initially I used to think, you know, if these guys are funded, these guys are like, if you do it, you do like a pro athlete. So when I'm actually doing it by myself, I have realized that I don't want to compromise anywhere. Even the massage guy who's coming, I think 10 times about him, look at his credentials, look at his degrees, whether he will screw it up or whether he'll do it properly. So the money I am investing should be worth. So yes, I mean, when you do it 100%, you have to do it like a pro athlete. And the investment, it will pay back, but initially it really requires a lot of investment to build it.
So how are you able to manage this, Pasha?
Wow, third tsunami. Well, I have a job at the Bike Affair which takes care of my regular maintenance, I can say. The rents, the food supplements, the travel I can take care of. And then the individual practice what I have. So kind of save up from there. Do a legal consultation, some documentation work, so that I kind of make some money there and use them wisely for the equipment and save up for the future upcoming things. And I have also created a crowdfunding link a few months ago so that to spread the word and so that I can get some help from anywhere possible. And the community in Hyderabad has is slightly aware about, you know, I have spoken to a couple of near and dear people about my crowdfunding link, and they have come forward to support me. The crowdfunding link is still active, and you can just log into Google and type crowdera/KR Pasha, and you'll find my dashboard page there. And if you want to come forward and contribute and support me in and be part of my journey, that's where you go and log into.
Could you spell it out, Pasha?
Yeah, it's crowdera/KR Pasha, KHIYARPASHA.
Cool. We'll put that link in the show notes as well.
So I hope our listeners will support you. Once again, just go to Google, search for Crowdera with and KR Pasha. You'll find the link, and you can help Pasha out, compete with the national and I'm sure international athletes out there.
Thank you very much, Harsha.
Thank you, Pasha. Good to have you on the show.
Oh, it was real fun, and I just got a small break from my regular routine. Kudos to you guys. Now I just have to run back and pack my stuff for next day.
It was great talking to you, Pasha. As always, write to us at podcast@thebikeaffair.com, and if you're listening to this on Apple Podcast, do review and rate us. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys. Thank you. Cheers. Okay.